Okay, go ahead, please, Anne. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. I'm Anne, and I'm an addict. And I'm really grateful to be here to share one more time my NA recovery birthday for 32 years. I'm in almost more amazement that I'm still alive because when I came into the rooms of NA, I thought I was ancient. I was 41. No, I always laugh about that, but I had spent 18 years before walking into the rooms. I had taken care of my mother who was dying, and she died soon after she turned 44. So when I hit around 40, it was starting to hit me that, you know, I didn't have much time left to live. Even though I have a paternal grandfather that lived to 97, so, you know, I didn't look at that part of it. But I do know that through active addiction, I didn't want to live anyway. So I had always hoped to just die. So I always figured I would die early, but hey, look, I'm still hanging around, you know. I want to say that a lot of people do not look at the trauma or don't feel that they went through any trauma in their life before becoming an addict. I'm not one of those people. I'm one of those people that, as a little girl, the first thing that ever became the whole thing was I was almost totally deaf. Only my parents, when they discovered it, actually, they didn't know about that. My mother discovered that I was stopping learning and that my younger sister was starting to go past me. And the doctor told her at the time that you have to understand that, you know, that mental retardation and your child may need to go to a special school to live. And I had met someone in recovery that who does hearing things and suggested a book that, you know, to read. And I found out that in my age group, it was extremely normal to be diagnosed as mentally retarded if you were deaf. But I wasn't. And when they discovered it, they found out that they could do some operation on my ears. And yes, I got hearing after that. But I did not get my full hearing back. But I never really got hearing aids until I was, you know, somewhere around 50. But, you know, those things were important. You know, I always heard the negative. You know, I'm stupid. Oh, that younger sister, when she was born, she was so pretty. But we had to put a bonnet on you so people would know you were a girl. And I heard you're ugly, but they didn't say that. But I heard you're stupid and you're ugly. And then, oh no, I developed early. You know, so here I am, this little girl starting to, you know, get breasts and everything. And random boys would just, I'd walk past and they would grab at me. I thought that was normal as I got older. I didn't find out till later that most people didn't have that problem, but I sure did, you know. So I got that, you know, so much. And I just, you know, I go through this over and over. And so I can say that, well, though NA doesn't count it, I was smoking probably a good half a pack of cigarettes a day by the age of 12. So I really feel that was my first drug. By the time I quit, which was about 30 years ago, I was smoking 2.5 packs a day. You know, so I mean, my addiction takes over in all forms in my life. But as I hit that adolescence, Dad discovered my body. And boy, that one hit me hard. And I went into major deep depression. And my mother, wanting to help me finally, you know, because I was in depression, wanted to know what was wrong. And I finally told her. And so she went to talk to my father and came back and said, you know, your dad doesn't know why you say this, but we could send you to a psychiatrist to find out why you're saying this about your father. Well, I was a young teenager by this point, and I thought, hell, you are not sending me anywhere to believe a lie. I know what happened, you know? And so that's when I really started using pretty good. You don't believe me about anything, you know? And it wasn't until young adulthood that I told my siblings, and I found out later, they didn't believe me. It's like, well, I was always the one that was you know, the one that was always in trouble, I guess. And I never understood that. But the biggest thing, you know, that so here I was, and now mostly I was drinking at that point. I wasn't going to do drugs. I'll tell you, by the end of my active addiction, I was saying, why don't you call alcohol a drug? Which is why I love the NA reading. Alcohol is a drug. And so many people say, period. But I used to go to a meeting in Huntington Beach, California, where they ended it with, duh. And I liked that. That made more sense to me. But, you know, I went through that horrid thing, and then I met this guy from a foreign country. Oh, how romantic, you know, and not knowing at all the true culture. Here I had been raised a good Catholic girl that already said that, you know, females aren't worthwhile because I wanted to grow up to be a priest and wear those pretty vestments. I didn't want to be a nun. They have ugly habits, you know. So I always say that, you know, that I found out I wasn't allowed to become a priest. And when it came time to go to college, by this time I'm a top student in school. And they said, oh no, the money's for the boys, not the girls. You have to find a good husband. And I know it's my era, but it was all that, you know, po-wet trash, you know, and you will stay that way. And so when I found this man from a foreign country, and I'm going to go off to where he was from, oh, thank goodness we broke up before, because I would be living in Saudi Arabia, or rather, I'd be dead in Saudi Arabia. So I learned Catholicism, which didn't like women. And I learned very quickly that the reason I was being beaten on a near daily basis is because the Quran did say to whatever. I guess I didn't read it properly because I didn't read it in Arabic. But if it did say that when I wouldn't obey or do things right, I was to be taken to the sofa, the couch, the whatever, and beaten. And so I was. And I'm so glad that I was able to escape that. But when I did, you know, what's really sad, but I went further. I mean, this whole time I'm only drinking when I could, but not around him, of course, but because it's against Islam. He could drink, but I couldn't. But so I went full into active addiction like crazy. And I was 21, but trust me, I'd already been drinking and doing stuff, not doing the other drugs, but now I said, this isn't right. I've been missing out on something. And so I did. I spent my life then trying to get as high as possible and to pay back anybody, you know? Go. I always say I was a weekend warrior in Las Vegas. The more I charged, the better they thought I was. Idiots. I was trying to make men pay for everything, you know? Anyway, I didn't do that for very long. I ended up having a child, but you know, I worked for a public utility, so I was grandfathered under the drug testing laws. And they weren't allowed to test me unless they saw me use or I got in an accident. And they all knew I was using. So when I was, because somebody was trying to put me up for a promotion to be an engineer and go into engineering, and they knew they couldn't have me, you know. But thank goodness it was, I even started working graveyard because as my daughter hit into her teens, because, you know, hey, she can take care of herself now. And I'm up all night anyway, so I might as well be working hard. And so I never got in trouble for not working. But they all knew I was using. There's no way, there's no doubt about that. But I also, during that time period, right before that, had decided that the spending money on pot was absolutely ridiculous. You know, so I started growing my own. And that's when my next door neighbor, about 10 years before I came into recovery, my next door neighbor came over to smoke a joint. And he was in that original 12-step program, and he showed me the steps. And I said, I can't do that. I'm an atheist. He says, well, you can find the God of your understanding. And I thought, you know, okay. So having been raised Catholic that doesn't read the Bible, I decided to read the Bible. I already read the Quran, but I read the Bible. And it didn't take long for me to go, well, I don't believe in this, you know. And I find it funny that most of us here have been the type that when we do things like that, we see it for what it is, you know. Now, I would say we're critical thinkers, you know. But it took that 10 years of trying to find how am I going to do this until it got so bad. And I thought, okay. And then my daughter reached an age where she was getting crazy. And I had a school tell me that I should be kicking her out of the house. And so I did. And anyway, I will say that what happened was, is I kicked her out of the house. She came back. I said, if you want treatment, I already checked. I said, if you want treatment, I'll get you some. So we smoked a joint. And she said, but mom, I'm the one with the problem, not you. And I thought, yeah, mom, the one when the house was busted, you know, they said, you're the one with no record, but they didn't know that it was my triple beam that was out on loan that night. And they didn't know all that. So you know what? I obviously was a heavily using addict and dealer. And you know, by that point, and had a job, you know, crazy me held on to that, you know. But so I went into recovery. You know, my daughter didn't stick with recovery. That's okay. She has extreme mental illness. And one of the hardest things to go through recovery for me is that her mental illness is so bad. I've had therapists tell me that she's so violent that she would most probably kill me if she resided with me. And that's been the hardest thing for me to go through. The good thing about recovery is my oldest granddaughter is now getting close to 30. And you know what? I get to have her in my life and she loves me because she can't have her mother in her life either, you know? But so I really, you know, just say that. So it took a while for me to get honest in recovery. I tried to pretend that I had some sort of a higher power that was a deity. And I get so tired of those people in the program who want to tell us to use good orderly direction. Every single one who has said that has been ultra religious. It says God with a capital G, and I am not illiterate. You know, no, I'm not the mentally retarded deaf kid. You know, so no, you can't fool me on that one. And once you stop believing, I don't know how people believe in things without using critical thinking. I do not comprehend that, because one of the things about critical thinking is to be a skeptic and not rely on emotions. And because of that, I just couldn't do it. So in ways I've reworded the steps, or I've reworded how I look at things, you know, but over time, things started getting pretty clear. I had 8 years clean when I almost died of the disease of addiction without using. I had 3 cranial aneurysms. I was in a meeting and I was talking to a newcomer who said, I don't know why I have to be here. You know, so I went up to talk to her afterwards and it felt like I got hit over the head with a shovel and the pain never stopped. And I will tell you that the good thing was, is there were a few medical people in the meeting, but the one person who was in the meeting was a SWAT sheriff, SWAT team. And he came up and said, you will go to the ER. No, I was like, yes, sir. You know, and off I went to the hospital that was almost across the street. And they operated on the wrong one the first time because there was so much blood on my brain. And I found out that that was probably why I'd stopped doing Coke, because Coke was giving me headaches. And Coke more than crystal methamphetamine seems to be more of a cause. But crystal methamphetamine is also, and I used all of those. But you know what? So I got clean. And I have to say that it was soon after that I started getting honest. And I was sponsoring somebody and I was who said, I can't do these steps. I don't believe. And I went, I don't either. And then I started getting honest. And I started getting the negative response in meetings when I would be honest about that. And I would get, you can't say, oh, who the atheist is here again, you know? And it was like, what are you doing? Well, I can't recover because of, you know, our literature doesn't say that, but if you know, it's gotten good. But I want to point out something. I was very big in HNI, hospitals and institutions, from almost the beginning of my recovery, as soon as I had enough time to speak on a panel. And then I became a panel coordinator at a huge area that had more. I was panel coordinator for women's panels, and they had more of them than some areas I've had for total meetings. But, you know, what the good part was is I lived in this one area that I what became the HNI chair. And I did that for years. And one of the panels I had was in a jail where the women had to went to a 6-month program of recovery or go to prison. And so I went there, and I went there lots of times. And I'm going to tell you something that happened. After I had stopped doing that, there was a convention coming up in Palm Springs, California. And I was living out towards that area at the time. And I went to it and I didn't want to go. I was going with, you know, I can't stand NA anymore. People are making fun of me because I don't believe, but I need recovery. I need the people, but I don't understand. So I got up to the front of the convention, just drove up for the day. And all these women came out. They were all these women that were now in sober living, right? Dressed nicely, not in jail uniforms, right? And they all came, Ann, thank you, you're here. It made me feel so good, like maybe I had been doing something right. And I was like, I needed their hugs more than they needed mine. Though they couldn't give me hugs when they were in jail. But now we can hug, which is one of the big things for me in NA is the hugs. And so I went in and I went to a woman's meeting, and it was a convention, so it was a huge meeting. And the one speaker ended or said part of her story, and my higher power is not a deity. And I went, tears coming down my face. And I went up to her later and cried and gave her a hug and said, I'm like that too. And I was getting ready to walk out of NA. And what I have discovered is that I had to start doing it more, and I started being more open. I wasn't the only one, you know, and I thought for so many years. And so when my one friend who said that she found this conference with AA nearby that we could go to that was for secular people. And so I went to it to find out how to start an NA meeting that was for people like me. You know what? And I went there. And they said, and what's your regular secular meeting? And I said, well, I'm really with NA. And they said, you know, there's another guy here that's the same thing. So that guy, he's over on this side of me on my screen. But anyway, I discovered him there and we found it. And I was able to start a live NA meeting, you know, and it was great. But about a year later is when I moved here to Albuquerque. I took retirement and I don't think that meeting is still going on, but I don't care. Because what happened with the pandemic is everything came online. And I can be honest today, because that was a big deal. So today, even for people who are not non-believers, you know what? I still do the steps my way. Because those things, the way that our literature is not dogma, but boy, you'd have a hard time hearing that from other people. And they tell me what my higher power is supposed to be without that. You know, so I always say that the best thing about it all is that, you know, it's one addict helping another. I don't have to do the steps that way. I can use my own wording. And I love to use art of healing. You know, I did that with a job I got after I retired from that one job. And I did go into a field that was more of helping other people. So, you know, they were victims of a crime. So, or survivors of crime, as we like to say. But anyway, what I found out is that I can help people that way because I have every trauma under the sun, I'm under my belt. So and I used everything I could, except for needles, because when I was a kid, they always were sticking those needles in me. And when they did, I kicked a pregnant nurse in the stomach and I heard quickly not to do that. So everybody who ever said, well, I'll shoot you up the first time, eh? You know, and it's like, oh, no, you don't. I don't want anybody to touch me with a needle. And I could get just as high, I thought, or high enough. And that was pretty much how I wanted to do that. I'm so glad I found recovery because the disease of addiction is a disease of self-loathing. And I hated myself so much. And now I love myself. I am a good person. I go out. Here I am, this retired old lady, and I go out hiking all the time. And I meditate while I'm hiking. What? I'm watching every step, aren't I? So I don't fall. And I, you know, sometimes I can come up with a mantra of my own, which doesn't have to do anything with a deistic or a theistic God. Find one of my own understanding. I'm not Joseph Smith and I'm not L. Ron Hubbard. So I won't come up with one, okay? So until then, I am grateful that the secular community has grown so much so that we don't have to feel alone anymore. And I can go to live meetings and be around people. And when I am, I always can say that I don't believe right after I've heard the religious preaching. You know, because our literature says it real clearly. And I love one of the readings that's used all the time in the one sentence. Many of our members have been clean for years as atheists. And look, I've been clean for 32 years. And I guess I can stay clean because the idea of using is no longer in my mind. And I want to thank you all for listening.